Everybody wants to go to Athens Town.
All right, second half kickoff here for the morning show presented by St. Mary's Healthcare System. David Johnston, Sam Franco. And you know who else is here with us? Former Georgia head coach and College Football Hall of Famer, Coach Jim Donnan. Hey, Coach, good morning.
Good morning. You know, the big thing we want to do here is relish in that Tech game for as long as we can this week, and then we'll look forward to going over to Bama. But I'm going to tell you, the preparation and detail that our team put in and the way we were just totally focused as a group, except for that kickoff return, was just overwhelming the way our team dominated the enemy, as Coach McGill would say.
The enemy.
But I really want to take my hat off to our whole program for what they were able to accomplish there. For 2 years in a row, to really just dismantle that offense, and then our offense doing what needed to do. We talked on Bulldog Friday night. One of the things that's very disconcerting to a wishbone team or three-back team is not be on the field. And you know, at one point there, I think going back to the last couple games, of course, we knelt down on the ball against the Minutemen from Massachusetts. But I think we had 15 or 16 straight possessions over a two- or three-game span where our team scored on offense. And that's just that's incredible efficiency. And just glad to see those guys playing and peaking at the right time of year, because we got to get some points this week. I mean, that's going to be the key, is can't shut down Alabama all the way. But everybody's talking about Alabama's dominance. But, you know, our team, except for the LSU game, the closest game we had is 14 points. So,
you know, I was talking with Jeff yesterday. I hadn't really thought about it. He brought this point of the game on Saturday, where after the first possession of the third quarter, Georgia was ahead 45-7. If there were no SEC championship game coming up, if there weren't, you know, if this were the last game of the regular season and you didn't another game until the bowl game, Georgia could have scored 60 or 70 points. But you're pulling people back off the field because you got to get ready for the for the game this
Saturday. There's a couple things that are really saying about that by both you guys talking about. Number one, we would do that more than likely against any opponent, but against a team that cuts you like Tech does and roll blocks you, it would have been ridiculous for Baker, who's got to be supreme in this coming game, or anybody to get hurt in that kind of situation. So they got some garbage stuff there, but who cares? But I think the other thing that helps us going into this game is our defense should be really fresh, because very few reps in the game,
right.
I think. And, you know, we pull Baker early. We pull a lot of guys. And so I always felt like at the end of the year, one of the things that I learned from Coach Switzer and several coaches I work with is you got to look back at the body of work that your young guys have been through since training camp. And it takes a toll on you. So you got to really work on being as mentally prepared as you can, but also physically, because you need to be fresh in a game like this, because there's going to be so many high-speed collisions and so much pressure to perform against superior athletes on both sides of the field that, you know, we'll practice hard this week and all that, but I know that Kirby knows how to roll it back a little bit, because I'm telling you now, our kids last week on Thanksgiving week, not being in school and everything, they gave it all up for the Dogs. I mean, they ran a lot of reps against that three-back stuff, and you heard Coach Smart bragging on the scout team, but our scout team was very efficient, because if you just think about it as a fan listening, you only got so many plays you can run in practice. And let's say that the scout team goes out there and has five or six busts and where they drop the ball or go the wrong way. So that's just a wasted time that your team has. But our team knew the plays. They worked hard at it. They took a lot of pride in it. They don't get credit for it, you know, as far as people knowing about it. But they really did a tremendous job of presenting a real good picture for our team.
And, Coach, I think that definitely had something to do with Georgia's ability to stop those A-back runs on the outside. And that's something over the years against this triple option attack that Tech runs, that's something that has killed Georgia, just not having the discipline on the outside. And their longest run was 10 yards.
Yeah, that was true. And I think the fact that we work so much on the roll block on the perimeter, our corners and safeties. You know, you mix it up who's got the run support, and I hope everybody listened to us last week when we explained that. But
1, 2, 3, 4.
That's right. But our 3 and 4 guys really did a good job of mixing it up. And so if 4's got the pitch, 3 needs to come hard in the alley. So we did a good job of – and I thought our backside people, like particularly DeAndre Walker and Grant – and those guys came from inside out when the guys started to cut back, you know. And they did a good job of hitting them. And the other thing that was, they never established the fullback at all. I mean, and it's hard to do that when you're not running many plays. I mean, they only ran 6 plays in the first quarter. A lot of that was our defense, but also our offense just, you know, just pounding them. And, you know, we took advantage of their corners, and Jake was right on the target there. And it was just you had to enjoy that if you're a Georgia fan, and you had to say take your medicine if you're a Tech fan. I thought Kirby was one of the best things he's ever said as a head coach. When he asked him about going against that, he said, hey, I think the only thing we can do is keep beating them, and maybe that'll change.
Yeah, you can definitely tell there's a little bit of saltiness in this rivalry between the two men leading the charge right now. And you know, Paul Johnson kind of calling that timeout late, trying to score some points, rub some people the wrong
way. That's his team, you know, and you can't blame him for that. That kind of makes it fun in the locker room. Say, hey, they got to call timeout with a few seconds go to get some more points. But those were needless stats that they got at the end. But, you know, when you got a team that's averaging 350-some yards rushing and they only get 100-some.
357 to lead the nation. They had 128 for the game.
Yeah, that was just
I think the defensive performance Saturday was even more impressive than last year with the game that Roquan and Walker had.
Well, I think for sure the stats say that, but I think the number of plays they ran helped us a little bit too. They didn't have many opportunities, and the offense kept them away, but the defense got them on some, you know, 3 and outs and things like that. But I think as an old coach here, that just watching the prep that we had for that game, you know, being over Thanksgiving week, they just had so many opportunities to look at their deals. And our scout team was good, and our support staff was good. Our GAs and guys like Tyson Summers, you know, did a good job of drawing up the cards to make them look exactly like Tech runs them. And, you know, he brings a lot to the table, too, having coached at Georgia Southern and knowing what that offense is about. And he can help Kirby and those guys. And Coach Tucker just really on top of things. But also offensively, you know, I don't know what we averaged per play the other day, but it had to be humongous, and it was very.
It was like 7. Let's see, what was it? It ended up being per play. It was 7.3, and theirs was 3.7.
Well, and then a lot of first downs, but it just looks like whoever you plug in there, Hill continues to play extremely well at right guard. You know, we had a situation where Baker's out now, and Cleveland's been out. And, you know, he's working at it, but, you know, people say, well, when's he going to get back? But, you know, the problem is if you're that big and tall and weigh that much and you have a broken leg, it's just hard to put a lot of weight on it, and then you hurt your ankle on the other side. So he can't figure out which way to balance it out there. I'm not trying to be funny about it, but he's really working at it, though. He goes out there and practices hard all week, and hopefully we can use him some this week. And then Cade Mays, as bad as it is to have an ankle or knee injury, a shoulder injury with a lineman is even more difficult because of the push you need to make with your hands and shoulders and all that. And I haven't heard what his situation is going to be either. But we've developed some quality depth there with Hill, and Salyer's getting some reps too in there. Without this recruiting class, this team would have been in bad shape when you look at all the guys we've called on to come through for us from the freshman class. I mean, and you're going to see more and more of that with the next class we're bringing in too. I mean, it's like a general manager in the pros. You're getting your drafts and you're getting your guys to supplement your team. And I certainly congratulate Marshall Malchow, the director of player personnel. Those those guys and his staff, they just work tirelessly evaluating players. Because look at it like this, both of you guys. Let's say, David, you have Metropolitan Atlanta, and Sam, you've got South Georgia, and both of you got a player that you think is really good that plays the same position, but we can only take one, and both of them want to come. So what are you going to do about it? I mean, that's hard. That puts a lot of – you got to evaluate. You got to watch their tape. You got to watch them in person, and you got to see how are they now, but how are they going to be 2 or 3 years from now? And it's really difficult as a head coach to think, well, I'm going to turn this guy down and wait on another guy. I know he's ready to come. And so that's what happens down the stretch here. The other thing is, you know, recruiting has started in force here where you can go out and make home visits and visit personally. So our coaches are working all day coaching, getting ready for Alabama, and then leaving at after practice and going to see these kids. And it's a tough deal. I mean, you're on a tight schedule.
That early signing period makes it tough, too. And although last year it was beautiful for Georgia.
Well, we just put the clamps on so many people that we didn't have to.
Getting all the publicity.
We didn't have to go. Yeah. And we didn't have to worry about too many down the stretch there in February. But the other thing that's great about that is, let's say you're signing. I think for us, we won't be able to take 25 this year because our 85 is going to be close. And for the fans there, you can have 85 on scholarship, but you can only take 25 at a time. Well, that looks like 4 times 25 is 100, but you have some natural, you know, people get hurt, people
attrition.
Have attrition there. Yeah, that's the way to help me, Sam. You're a college graduate. There's big words there, but you have that natural attrition, and you also have some injuries, and you have some transfers, but I think we can take at least 20, 22. So, but the good thing about if you sign them early is that whole month of January, our coaches can focus on 2020 kids. They can go out. They can't actually talk to them in person, but they can go to their school. So if Kirby Smart comes to your school and you're a player for 2020, as soon as he walks in the building, you know that. So at least the symbolism of Kirby coming to see you, you know, as compared to if he's having to still recruit 2019 kids, as the time that he spends there is really impressive to me that we can go work on 2020, although we got to work on a few guys for 19. But that's why that early signing period helps a lot.
I love it. I didn't think I would, but I like it now.
Yeah, you know, and it gives, like you
y'all
said.
Y'all get to have two shows too, don't you?
Well, probably, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, last year was just weird because we hadn't had an early signing period for football. We didn't know what it was going to be like, and it turned out to be fantastic.
Humongous. Oh,
yeah.
Humongous.
Yeah.
And they signed so many guys.
Right. Yeah. And that's what – and so basically, the early signing period's now going to be signing day.
Yeah.
You'll have a few in February, but most of them are going to be in for the early part.
And some of these recruitniks, so to speak, can't even enjoy Christmas worrying about, well, JoJo down in Tallahassee might be going there. I heard he made a visit and all that. Hey, you read all this stuff, and these sites are good and everything, but, hey, just hang with Coach Smart. He'll know what the best guys to take, and we'll have a good – you know, we're going to have a top five class. It could be even better. I mean, you know, we've lost a couple kids, but you know what I used to tell our coaches, and I still believe this. If you lose somebody, you lose them. There's nothing you can do about it. All you can do is just say, pour that water through your hands, let it hit the ground, and that's how long you're going to miss them. I mean, that's about it. What can you do?
Yeah.
I mean, it's over with. So, hey, just be glad you got the ones you got. And that's the thing that will be impressive to me on Saturday, and I'm sure a lot of fans will get there for the warm-ups. But you can put our jerseys on their team and their jerseys on our team, and they're both going to look pretty close as far as personnel for this game. And our team looks good on the hoof. We got some athletic guys that have been developed here under Coach Sinclair's strength and conditioning program. And these guys are so much better than when they got here. That's the whole point.
And that's how it was different before, too. And, I mean, again, not trying to bring Coach Rick into all this. It seems like every time we talk about now compared to that, you always have to throw out this. I'm not trying to bring Coach Rick into this, but
it's
like
it's a better run program now.
Well, not even that, just the fact that what Coach Donnan was alluding to is, look at what the Dogs look like when they get off the bus. Yeah. You know, not that they weren't big guys before, but just the overall just but, look of the program is just completely changed. But you
give them credit that last year they won 10 games. They just the games they lost were just ones that just didn't look like a football team, you know, against Florida. That game will come back to haunt us forever. But I would say this, though, that's one of the things you want to look at a kid when you're recruiting him is, has he really, you know, he's a good high school player and he's got, you know, good stats and all, but is he as good as he's ever going to be as compared to a guy that's raw, has really good growth potential, all those different, you know, variations that you look at. But the biggest thing for me is if a guy can run, he's got a lot to add to your team. But if a guy can't run or move, I don't care how big he is or how much he dominates, speed is the name of the game in this SEC. You got to have quickness and speed or you're just going to get your butt beat.
Well, when you were recruiting, what would be the first thing to knock somebody off your page? Their speed? Well,
Georgia here would be grades.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
The first thing you got to do.
But physically, would it be?
Well, the first thing you got to do here is make sure the kids not only have the grades to get in here,
right.
but the grades to stay in here. Because these kids are going against five-star students, just like they are five-star players. I mean, they're going against the classes are set up for, or there's no way to hide somebody here. And you know, by that, I mean, there's no classes, you know. That a guy's going to get a guaranteed grade like some of these schools. But the thing I would look for, first of all, is movement. Of course, you got to look at position savvy, you know, how does he play his position? But
right. But
you also look, can he play another position in college? always like guys that played defense in high school along with offense, you know what I mean? I like wide receivers because they could still play defensive back maybe when they come here like Mark Webb or somebody like that.
Right, right. Well, things you got to know, things you got to do. So, like, when you saw Champ Bailey, it's like you weren't ruling him out. You knew he was pretty good. So,
Champ,
that guy.
The first time I ever saw Champ in person, I hadn't met him, but I was down there at a high school game in Folkestone, basketball game, and there were more coaches there than there were people. I mean, Florida was over there. Tech was over there. I mean, South Carolina. There were a lot of coaches in the stands there. And Champ just – I think he got 36 that night. But the best thing about it was when the game was over, we were going to Champ's house and nobody else was. So we enjoyed that. And as soon as I walked in, I got to meet Boss, which made me even more happy because I knew he had his brother here already. You know, the older brother was a corner, then it was one of the best nights I ever spent because not only we get Champ, we got his brother too, and we had Ronald already here.
The Baileys.
How about Georgia though? Had to look good and made me feel good. I sent you guys that. The deal that Champ, Seymour, and Hines are in the last 15 for the Hall of Fame. And
absolutely.
Three guys off one team, that's just impressive.
That's crazy.
And those are all first ballot guys for me. I mean, you look at the
NFL problem,
careers they had.
They definitely dominate, but the problem is they only pick about four, and it's hard to – but eventually all of them will make it.
I don't want them to all get in at the same time. I want it to be spread out so you
have
more of a
good
Georgia thing.
But it would be cool, though, for
It'd
Georgia
cool
to market
if
it.
They all
we got three
them.
In the same
yeah.
class.
Yeah.
That'd be awesome.
Yeah.
Well, I guarantee you, I'm going to be up there when each one of them gets in there.
Absolutely. Coach Donnan here in the studio with us as the Dogs took care of Tech on Saturday, 45-21. By the way, Jonathan Ledbetter – who had another incredible game. He had half of Georgia's sack or half of Georgia's tackles in the first quarter. Tech ran six plays in the first quarter, and Ledbetter had three tackles.
Probably his best game of the year. I mean, he's been very good for Georgia over the years, but for this season, this might be his best. And I think a lot of it had to do with, like we were talking about a second ago, how Georgia did such a good job of keeping the runs on the inside and limiting the A-back production to the outside, and that feeds everybody back into where Ledbetter is.
Right. again, eye discipline, position discipline, playing your role. We swarmed the ball. They didn't, you know, a lot of times when you watch some of these three-back teams, you see all these big plays break, you know what I mean, because everybody converges on the fullback and you pitch it late, or everybody goes out wide and the fullback hits a gap there. But our team discipline was just outstanding, and our tackling was good, and got to give them A-plus all the way around. That was just complete, thorough butt-kicking.
You brought up something last week that I hadn't thought about, too, with the blocking schemes. I say that in a nice way that Tech uses. That part of what makes that effective is that the defense, you're looking down at right. your own feet, and in a blink of an eye, you could miss the football, or you could miss a pitch yeah. because you're looking down at the ground because you're worried about them coming at your legs like that.
Yeah, you just got to trust your technique. I mean, if anybody in any sport, if you start worrying too much about the other guy instead of what you're supposed to do, then it really comes back to haunt you. You've got to react to what he does. So if you're a defensive end against a regular team, if the end blocks down, why is he blocking down? Because they're trying to secure the inside, but somebody's coming from inside out to block you. So if you widen on a down block, you're just helping the defense. So you got to square your shoulders up. The guy blocks down, stay square, and take on the guy with your inside forearm to keep him from kicking you out. But if all of a sudden, let's just pretend that you're a defensive end, the guy blocks down, then you turn your shoulders and go upfield, you're just creating a tremendous gap in the defense right off the bat. So you got to read blocks, play your technique, and understand that sometime you're not going to get as good of stats as somebody else, but you got to play team defense. And boy, we used to love when I was running the wishbone when teams started trying to run all these exotic defenses, because we knew they'd get confused, and we knew what we were doing, and they didn't. And like Switzer said, hey, they keep doing that, our fullback's going to hit his head on the goalpost about 30 times. I love hit that fullback's head on the goalpost, because they knew they just
you're right, though.
Gashed
they,
him.
They didn't really establish that fullback.
No. It's hard for – you know, I'm not going to take up for Coach Johnson except to say calling plays against a team when you're not making first downs and the other team is scoring at the clip we are, you're trying to win the game, and it's hard to come back from that kind of offense, you know. I mean, and the one thing that we've exposed the last 2 years for Tech, Sam, that I think is really mm-hmm. impressive to me is we've exposed their pass protection. You know, we have gotten in that quarterback's face both years when they have to throw the ball because, you know, that's not their bailiwick. You know, they don't – they're play-action passing team. So when you know they're passing, you pin your ears back and come with some heat, they have a hard time protecting because that's something they don't do.
Coach, you also mentioned this. This isn't the difference in whether Tech was going to win the game or not, but on their very first possession after Georgia had scored – they get the ball at the 35 because Rodrigo had kicked it out of bounds. So they get, you know, okay field position there. They get a first down running the football. And then on second and six at midfield, they throw an incomplete pass, which is the worst thing they can do. Then on third and six, they get 5 yards. So they got a fourth and one at the Georgia 45, and they get a false start and then have to punt. And then Georgia gets the ball, scores to go up 14-0, and that was basically
that
the
was
ball
it.
Game.
And here's the thing. When they throw the ball on the running down, they're really doing you a favor because 50% chance they're going to hit it, 50% chance they're not, as compared to running a play where they're going to get 3 yards. But they had to think they had something on that.
Well, I was going to say, for that in their offense,
usually
if it's second, is Marshall – is he is the play called to be a pass, or is that something he sees?
No, I would say he probably they don't run RPOs like we do, but I got to think that there was a call pass. But the thing that helped us on third down, Marshall's helmet came off, and they had to put Oliver in
right.
there.
Right. Yeah.
And listening to Coach Johnson, he said that the players got, he said three, and some of the players thought he said freeze. Freeze for everybody. I know for us, freeze is a deal where you just start calling your cadence, but you never snap the ball.
Right.
You just put your head down, close your eyes, and pretend you're in
I see. You think they're trying to get Georgia to
jump.
Well,
I don't know if they were or not, but I think coach had a play call, and some of the people thought freeze, and then the one that didn't jumped off sides. But that was nice of him. You know, those guys with those high IQs once in a while jump off sides. We had this old boy that played for us that barely got into state that played left guard, and another guy that was a Phi Beta Kappa that was a left tackle. And so we got a big game against Duke, and we called a play on the hard count, and the left tackle, the Phi Beta Kappa, jumped offside, and our left guard said, "You stupid SO," you know. But he was making a 4-0, and this kid was fairly, but hey, sometimes they jump.
It happens. I tell you, again, it wasn't the difference between whether Georgia was going to win the game or not, but that one possession to start the game for Tech completely set the tone.
Hey, you just got to make them miss their turn.
Yeah.
I mean, you miss your turn. And you know, we talked about this too, and next year we'll talk about it again. There's only going to be 8 or 9 possessions if both teams play good. And you go out there and don't make a first down or get any points, and the other team scoring, you know, there was a marked difference in the athleticism of the two teams. Ooh. So I thought our speed guys on the outside against their corners, our O-line against their D-line.
Widest gap between the two teams I've ever seen.
I'm just telling you now, that makes my mouth water thinking about the future. But as we've said, our team is only going to get – I mean, I see a quantum leap in our team from this year to next year. Looking at 63 out of 85 are freshmen or sophomores, and the class we got coming in, and the JUCOs we got coming in. This Johnson, this kid coming in, a DN, JUCO, best linebacker in the country, supposedly JUCO. We got a defensive back, JUCO, coming in from down here in Georgia Military. That's going to be really good for us. So, again, it's like I talked about, you're just supplementing your team with guys that can come in and help you. We lose Baker. We got some really good DBs that are coming up. But you get a kid that's already a junior that can come in and step in there. That's going to help our secondary.
All right, Coach, we'll take a quick break.
Back here on the morning show.
Hey, I just can't take my eyes off those Georgia Bulldogs.
You got that right, Coach. Thank you for listening to the morning show. We are presented by St. Mary's Healthcare System, Sam Franco, David Johnston, Coach Donnan along with you here.
Frankie Valley's 84 years old.
I wonder if he can still hit those octaves.
I don't know. Is he still out? Is he still performing?
Oh, he is.
Is he?
Yeah, I've seen him on, like, I haven't seen him, but I mean, I've seen that he's been on tour recently.
Good for him.
I heard he'd set himself on fire for a dollar.
There you go.
Yeah, you know, he's still out there doing that stuff, man.
No kidding. Hey, maybe incredible. That's what keeps him going.
No, it's great stuff. I do know that Jersey Boys is coming back to the Classic Center sometime.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Hey, so, go see it. I've seen it twice. It's strong.
Go check that thing
you
out.
You recommend it, Coach?
Hey, it's great.
Coach,
I mean, I don't know
check it
gonna,
out.
I don't know who's going to be the group doing it,
right?
It's certainly the music. It's great to see. Of course, when we went, we were probably the youngest people there, and we were 70 some. So you're seeing some people boogie woogie that you wouldn't think. I mean, people coming in there was getting up and bebopping. I like to see those older people doing that.
That's awesome, Coach. I wanted to ask you. You know, I know we were kind of reminiscing on Tech here, but you know, a big thing that happened in the Iron Bowl is that you know, Alabama safety Jared Maiden got the targeting call. He's their dime safety, so he's going to miss the first half. You know, if you're Georgia, do you take a couple shots down the field, try and test some inexperience?
Well, you know,
in the
certainly
secondary?
We had a situation where the kid didn't play for LSU in the first half, the linebacker, and, you know, we tried to do some things. But you know, it just depends on what they're going to try to play on us. You know, we got so many personnel groupings. You know, we can go 2 tights, 2 wides, 3 wides, 1 tight, you know. How are they going to sub against us, you know? But it definitely takes a little bit away from them to not have that guy in their dime situation. You know, nickel, they play, you know, 5 defensive backs, dime, they play 6. So, but anytime you lose a guy like that, particularly in a big game in a situational type stuff, and you got to figure he's one of their better, I'm not sure, but I would think he's one of their better special teams players too.
Yeah, that's true. You lose a guy that probably plays a lot of – I thought it was funny because they had just shown, like, the scholar athletes of the game.
Right, right.
Alabama's scholar athlete was this guy that, you know – Thurston Howell, I don't know what his name was.
It
was like Thurston Howell, and it was like, okay, here's a guy that never plays and everything. And then after that was the targeting, and then that guy was the one that came in.
Yeah,
you know, it was just funny.
Just goes to show he was smart,
and yeah, out on the field there too. But with the what would have really hurt them, I think it was Surtain had one call right after that.
Yes.
They overturned
yeah,
it.
Yeah, they did.
He would have been the one that would have really been
well,
big.
Well, you know, Nick called right into the office and said, look, you can't get but one of us this week. We got to play the championship. And I'm looking forward to breaking down in the next hour about my thoughts on the four teams and all that. But, you know, Auburn did some good things on them early. I mean, they've had two straight weeks where – they just kind of ponied around the first half. You know, Citadel tie game at half, 17-14 against, you know, last week. So we'll see how it rolls. But that's a bad thing to say, rolls, when it's
roll tied. That's all right. I knew what you meant.
But I think you got four-quarter game, and our team needs to understand last year we played two great quarters and a pretty good third quarter, but not good enough to put them away. But – and, you know, you don't really go back and look at last year too much as far as every team's got a different personality from this year. You know, they're certainly passing the ball a lot more with Tua in there. And they're still trying to do a lot with their offensive line, which helps sometimes but hurts them too because they get some lost yardage plays on people running through and things like that. Whereas our line, we don't see many lost yardage plays here. Our backs are getting to the point of attack and really getting to that second level, and our pass protection's been pretty good too, and that's going to be critical. The number one thing I would say is avoid lost yardage plays against Bama because you don't want them to start blasting you with knowing that you got to throw the ball.
Let's look at the point spread for a moment.
Oh, boy.
And, like, how do you – all right, so I'll give you 2 points of view on the point spread. You tell me
what is
you
it
think.
Now? Started out at 10, it's up to
13.
Started
10. We're calling it 13 today. This is the largest that Georgia has been an underdog during Kirby's time here in Athens. But on the flip side of that, this is the smallest line that Bama has had this year. So you can take that two different ways.
Well, I think the number one thing is that certainly Bama hasn't played a very loaded schedule. You look at the teams they've played. We've played two teams that are, you know, three teams in the top 25. Kentucky, I think, will probably be 18. Florida will probably be 10. I don't think they're a top 10 team. And LSU, you know, they'll probably be right there too. They'll probably be below Florida now, but they might still be playing that overtime. Is that game still going on?
Still going. They are in overtime number 256.
Wow. I mean, I tried to go to sleep hard the other night. I mean, I was actually in the bed watching that game, and I couldn't cut it off. I mean, I said, come on, somebody do something. But you talk about that was the cat game. They're the Tigers. That was a cat game because Texas A&M had 9 lives. I mean,
wow.
Some of those miracle catches and those bad calls and – you know, you usually don't see a coach get Gatorade-ed when he loses a game. That was Coach O. Yeah, it felt good for a little while, but it didn't feel good when I got on the plane.
Well, Coach, let me ask you this, and you may completely disagree with me on this, but when two teams are playing like that, does it come to a point where you almost have to stop? The overtime, it's just ridiculous when
I'd like to see – the one thing I would like to see on our overtime, I like it, and I heard you talk about that guy ran that kickoff back with in 1980. What's his name?
Dave Williams.
Yeah, Dave Williams. So, basically, I'd like to see – start the ball on the 40. So it's just not a given you're going to score.
Right.
Instead of the 25. And that would be the change I'd make. I like the idea of going for two after two situations. And, you know, hey, LSU had their chances, but Texas A&M had it inside the 5 two times and didn't get a touchdown when they, you know, couldn't get it in there. And but both those teams fought hard. It's tough for one of them to lose. And they really kicked LSU out of a major bowl, I think. I don't think you're going to see them. They would they would have definitely been in the Sugar Bowl if we'd have beaten beat Alabama.
What people were kind of saying was that if Georgia doesn't beat Alabama Saturday, that LSU loss was probably good for the Dogs, that they, because LSU probably would have gone to the Sugar Bowl.
Yeah, I mean, we're gonna be okay regardless. But you know, there's so many different ways to look at this deal. But I just feel like getting back to Alabama's schedule. You know, the fact they've dominated everybody. What, 20 points is the closest they've had? What's the closest?
22 with a win over A&M.
Yeah.
It's never been – I guess it had never been done before.
Yeah.
But this is the smallest of a point spread they've had. They were 14.5-point favorite at LSU, so this point spread's their smallest of the year.
But here's the thing that really just rocks me. I guarantee you, if you talk about the worst team you've seen in the SEC since Coach Kramer got us to go to split divisions – Arkansas Razorbacks, and they got 31 points on Bama. Of course, Bama got 65, but you know, for them, they got 17 the first half on them, and they usually can't play dead in a Western movie, and they were terrible, this team. But that gives me a lot of hope that Arkansas, with their team, can score 17 points against Alabama's first-team defense. I mean, that's pretty impressive to me from our standpoint, because I guarantee you, we play Arkansas home and home and meet them halfway. I mean, you know.
That's the game on their schedule that just doesn't make any sense. And look at all these other scores and all these games on their
the
schedule,
only thing
but
I can
that's
figure
the one
out,
that doesn't make any
sense. The only thing I
sense.
Can figure out, the game started at 11, yep. And some of those guys are still asleep about 12, 15.
It was 11, and there was also – what was the deal with that game? ESPN, there had been something. They couldn't – the camera guys weren't allowed to get back up on the cameras because of
– in the wind or something. Whatever.
Wind, yeah. It was some kind of weird thing.
They had those long distance. I mean, it's like it's like the game was in Little Rock, but it looked like it was being filmed from over there at Fayetteville.
I mean, it was very, very bizarre that morning. And like you said, it was an 11 a.m. kickoff.
But comparative scores are hard to deal with.
I know.
They said, well, hey, Tech got 21 points.
Yeah,
on
exactly. Exactly. You
there wasn't any doubt.
Break it down.
But seriously, you talk about 31 points, but Bama got 65. And they probably got 100 on them. But,
I know. That's
I tell you, the team's got to feel disappointed is Missouri. They won 8 games and they lost 2 games. They absolutely had one against South Carolina and against Kentucky. I mean, they're a team that could have been. So us dominating the Eastern Division looks even better from a standpoint. You got Kentucky and Florida in the top 25, and then you got Missouri, who's close there. You got 3 teams with 8 or more wins that we completely annihilated. I mean, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
We destroyed all 3 of those teams.
They had that stretch where they lost to Georgia, lost a game to South Carolina they probably shouldn't have, then they had to go to Tuscaloosa, and then that game on October 27 when they lost 15-14 to Kentucky. But other than that, that's the thing they've done, Coach. They beat the lesser teams.
Yeah, that's hard to do. I mean, you got to go out there and do your job every week. And the one thing that's impressive about Georgia, 7 of the 8 teams we beat were 500 or better, you know, so that helps. But I like the fact that that our team has improved. After that LSU game, we had some warts. We had some stuff that didn't look very good, but we've really cut down on our mistakes. We're getting lined up better, and we're playing at a better level right now. Unfortunately, we got to play the best team in the country. But
oh, yeah.
If we beat them, though, that's going to be great, because we would play – we'll be either 2 or 3, and we'd play Notre Dame. And of all the top 7 or 8, that'd be the team I'd like to play, just because – I mean, not from a standpoint you're licking your chops, but if you got to play them or Clemson or Oklahoma or Ohio State or Alabama, wouldn't you play Notre Dame?
Of course. Of course. We'll talk more about that on the other side. We got to take a quick break.
Oh, baby. Yeah, baby. Woo, baby. Have me some fun tonight. Yeah.
Little Richard.
Little Richard. I saw him at the Reynolds Coliseum back in 1964.
I bet he tore it up, didn't he?
He was killing it.
Back then, what was it like racially if you went to go see a black performer in a – was it – like, what was it like back then?
Well, you know, we had several all black schools there in Raleigh, St. Augs, and so it was always a mixed crowd. It was great.
It wasn't tension or anything. Like, everybody was just there having a good time.
The ones I went to, I watched Little Richard and Fats Domino one night. So
would have been phenomenal to go see something like that back then. I think that was incredible.
Well, I mean, those people inspired so much different music. I mean, the Beatles covered Little Richard, Elvis, all those
people. They brought Little Richard back on the stage there, and he had his cape. He had already finished up, and he was cooling down with that cape.
He had a cape.
And, you know, he looked like a matador when he just kind of pulled it off.
That's awesome.
That's great.
My dad had a cape. Now I'm thinking of Seinfeld.
He said, bop, bop, a loop, bop, bop, bam, boom, tutti, frutti, all Rudy. Gonna tell Aunt Mary about Uncle John. I came to me, they had a lot of fun, old baby.
Oh, my gosh. That's fantastic. The great Little Richard. Oh, man. Our man Steve Colquitt says, Jersey Boys at the Classic Center next month.
So that's what I said.
Steve's all over it, man. He's covering the swimming team, I'm sure, but. I tell you, Steve does a good job for George. I'm just fortunate to have a loyal guy like that, been here so long.
Between him and Mike Mobley and Christopher Lakos, Leland Barrow, and I hope I'm not leaving somebody else.
Horsemen.
I know.
All led by.
And the great Claude Felton.
How old is Claude now? 136. But hey, Claude is. Hey, no matter whatever deal you got to ask Claude about, he can handle it.
He is unbelievable.
He's a godfather of everything. That's the great thing you mentioned about Lakos and Mobley. All those guys, they love their sports, and they do so much with it.
They're the best. They really are. All right, fourth and final hour coming up.